This is KBOO Portland. It's 11 a.m. We're going to move right into Mr. Jones's neighborhood.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? It's a neighborly day in this beauty wood, a neighborly day for a beauty.
Good morning, neighbor. I'm glad we're together again. We have a very special show for you today on Mr. Jones's Neighborhood, the children's program for reluctant adults. I'm the host of Mr. Jones's Neighborhood, Ken Jones, no relation, by the way. You wouldn't know it from this show, but Portland is one of the most literate cities in the country. That's according to a study conducted at Central Connecticut State University just a few years ago. One of the study's six key indicators of literacy was number of bookstores, and we're blessed to have so many here in our hometown. On today's show, we pay tribute to Portland's independent bookstores, and we have four booksellers live with us now in the KBOO studios in alphabetical order by bookstore name: Michael Keefe of Any Blooms, Sally McPherson of Broadway Books, Craig Florence of Mother Foucault's Bookshop, and Elise Schumach of Rose City Book Pub. Michael, Sally, Craig, and Elise, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, I'd like to go around the table first and get everyone's origin story, like they say in superhero comics. Tell us a little bit of how you got started and why. And here I thought we'd go in chronological order, starting with Annie Blooms, which started back in 1978. Just
That's
amazing.
Right.
You've been going so long, Michael. You're the store's publicist and events coordinator, and you've been with Annie Blooms since 2000.
That's right.
Which is another a large chunk of years. Can you take us back to the founding of the bookstore and how you got involved?
Well, I wasn't involved in the founding of the bookstore, of course.
But, I know that.
Yes.
That preceded you by about 20 years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so the current owner, Bobby Titchener, opened the bookstore with Susan Bloom back in 1978 across the street from its current location in Multnomah Village. And then after about a year or so, Susan left, and it's just been Bobby ever since. The store moved across the street to where it is right now, and in the early 80s some point. Been there ever since, and just celebrated our 40th anniversary last October.
What'd you do for the celebration? Were there, was there cake, party,
there
something like
cake,
that?
There was cake, yeah. We had a nice party in the store. And
I was there.
And Sally was there.
Sally was there.
Yes. Yeah, so it was lovely. Sally can speak more to it as well.
The cake was good.
Okay, good. Yes. Excellent.
Now, you're really an institution of Multnomah Village. You changed locations, but it was basically across the street.
Right.
So what's it like being in that community? It's pretty tight there, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's a really wonderful community, and people are super supportive. Almost every day, someone will come in and say that they chose to buy the book at an independent bookstore, or specifically Annie Blooms. We've seen generations of book readers growing up in the store and coming back, and it's really wonderful.
What's that like? You seem like maybe kids that came into the bookstore and were browsing the children's section, and now all of a sudden they're looking at a little more serious literature.
And they're bringing in their own kids, and yeah, it's really fun to see that happen over the years, and people who've been coming to the store for at least as long as I've been there, and yeah, it's really nice.
Now, you've been, you're a musician and a fiction writer, too.
That's correct.
And you also take care of Annie Bloom's music collection, which is CDs?
Until recently, yes.
They're phasing that out, or?
We did phase that out recently.
Yeah. Most people have gone to digital now, right? Online and streaming.
Yeah, streaming and downloads and all of that. Yeah, sales were just getting a little slow, and Baker & Taylor was our distributor, and they went under, and it seemed like a good time to phase it out.
It's almost like radio set CDs, that people aren't buying them.
Right.
Everything's online. In a previous interview I read you did with Tin House, you said, "Literature was once a place I visited, now it's the land I live in." What do you mean
that
by that?
My God, that's so profound.
It is. It's such a wonderful quote. I was just wondering what you meant by that, and how'd you make that transition? Was it through working at the bookstore?
Quite possibly that's what I meant. But my previous life before working at Annie Bloom's was in music retail, which is the carryover to formerly having the CDs there. I worked in music stores and even owned a CD store briefly in the late 90s.
In Portland?
In Portland,
where
yeah.
was that?
When was it?
Where was the store?
When and where? It was 97 to 2000, and it was on Division and 30th over in Southeast, across the street from what used to be Nature's.
Yeah, that area's changed quite a bit.
So I don't even recognize it anymore. Yeah. So after that folded, I was just looking for a part-time job and was burned out on the music business and thought, oh, I really love reading books and it'd be great to stay in retail because that's a comfortable environment for me. And there's this wonderful independent bookstore in my neighborhood. I should go see if I can get a little part-time job while I figure out what to do next.
And
19 years later.
I would be remiss not to mention your wife, who's a prominent member of the literary community here, Liz.
Yes, Liz Prado is my wife and is the author of a couple of books, most recently Volcanoes, Palm Trees, and Privilege. About Hawaii, yes. It's part memoir and part history of Hawaii. Mostly it's about colonialism and her relationship to that and wrestling with that.
Oh. Now, next up, Sally from Broadway Books, another important institution in Portland's literary community. You're a co-owner of the store, and they opened their doors in 1992, but you were initially a customer, and
That's
then
correct.
In 2007, you were invited to become a partner?
That's correct.
I was going to ask about that story.
Well, I moved into the neighborhood in 2003, so I'd been shopping there for quite a long time, and I was working in the corporate world in educational publishing. And in 2004, I decided I'd had enough of the corporate world and the airplane travel and decided to fulfill my longtime dream of owning a bookstore on the Oregon coast. So I started working part-time at the Cannon Beach Book Company and part-time at Broadway Books. And in 2007, Roberta Dyer was the original founder of the bookstore with Gloria Borg Olds, and Gloria had retired in 2007 or 2005. So in 2007, Roberta asked me to become a business partner with her, which we did for several years together. And then Roberta retired in 2015, and Kim Bissell came in as my business partner.
And you two are the partners now running the
Correct.
Store. What were the initial challenges when you became a partner of the bookstore? You had had a lot of experience, both in Cannon Beach and at Broadway Books as a staff member.
I'd had a little bit of experience, but the first year I started, I signed my partnership agreement on April Fool's Day, which I'm not sure what exactly that was indicative of. And then that winter was a pretty tough winter. That was when Amazon was sort of in its heyday with ebooks, and it was a tough winter weather-wise. And one day when Roberta and I were the only people in the store for several hours, she said to me, perhaps we should think about an exit plan. And I said, a what? And I said, no, we're not going to do that. And so we buckled down and figured out how to push through that moment, and all good since then.
That was kind of motivating, wasn't it?
It was very, very motivating.
The words exit plan.
Yes, I was like, are you kidding me? I just changed my whole life for this. So, yeah.
And you're still here. It's just wonderful.
And yes, we're still here. 28 years.
Now, the neighborhood, you're still in the same location.
Yep, we haven't moved.
And in Northeast Portland, of course, on Broadway. Mm-hmm. The neighborhood's changed a bit, hasn't it, since you've become a partner in the store?
It has changed. You know, it sort of rolls along with a variety of changes. When the bookstore first opened and when I first moved into the neighborhood, a children's place was located kitty corner across the street. So we didn't stock as many kids' books as we do now because it was an independent children's bookstore. And then right after Roberta and Gloria signed the lease for the property on where we are now, we found out that Barnes & Noble had signed a lease to move into where the Goodwill building is now. So for the first several years of the bookstore being in business, they had a Barnes & Noble down the street.
And that was pretty strong competition, wasn't it?
It was pretty strong competition, but they moved to the mall where they belong, and now we get along just fine.
They're still around?
Barnes & Noble is still alive
okay.
in the mall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know Borders closed a few years ago. And
right.
Barnes
it is, you know, it's disappointing the number of empty shops you see on Broadway and Widler from, you know, business owners who don't really care if there's something in the space or not. But there's been a lot of businesses that have been around for a long time. We've got Broadway Floral, Great Wine Buys, Sofa Table Chair, you know, that are hanging in there. And we have great new businesses moving in. St. Simon is one of my favorite coffee shops. And right next door is Visit Nail Salon and Costello's. I mean, there's a lot of great new businesses moving in. So it's just kind of a roller coaster of activity.
And you have no plans to move or anything, to stay in that same location?
Not a chance.
Oh, great. And I will not mention the words exit strategy.
Please don't. I would appreciate that, Ken.
Now, we have the two newer kids on the block. Mother Foucault's, which is located not far from KABU and Rose City Book Pub. Craig Florence owns Mother Foucault's, which opened in 2011. Craig, how did Mother Foucault's get its start? I read an interview you did where you were in Paris staying at the legendary Shakespeare and Company, Sylvia Beach's a place, and it was ideal, right?
It was pretty wonderful. Yeah, I think that's what inspired me to open the shop.
We're just adjusting Craig's mic here.
Sorry.
He's sharing it with Elise.
Sorry, I don't have my radio face on. So I lived and worked at Shakespeare and Company in Paris in the 90s, and then when my son was born, I wanted to try something different and looking for something to do. And I opened up just the first half of the shop. We expanded 5 years ago, and it was it's been a learning experience.
Now, I read that you got a lot of help at the beginning from Charles Selyuzicki.
Of course, yeah, he's a great mentor.
I've known of him when I got married, which was in 1984. My favorite book of all time is Gravity's Rainbow by Thomas Pynchon. Yeah. And my wife, as a wedding present, got me a first edition through Charles Selyuzicki. It was,
nice.
I think the hardcover, there was only about 3,000 or 4,000 printed, and then it was in a cheaper soft cover at the time because they figured Pynchon's audience didn't have much money.
Very desirable.
Anyway, that's great. But can you tell us
Charlie's
how Charles...
probably kicking himself.
For selling that.
Just hold on to that for another couple decades.
Right. How did Charles assist you? Did he recommend books?
He has so much experience. I mean, you know, I don't know, 1,000 years of experience or something like that. I can't remember. But so he came to the shop pretty soon after I opened, and has been kind of helping me ever since, you know, scouting books and finding books and, you know, tracking things down. And it's been pretty great.
Was initially, before you took it over, the space, was a tattoo store?
Was a tattoo parlor in there. It was previously, at some point, it was a restaurant or something, and then the tattoo shop, there was a fire, and they remodeled the building, and And then we kind of, my friend Christine Danker-Walter and Jeffrey Wonderful and I built the space. And then after a few years.
You did the shelves. And I read that came from an old house in an old section of Portland.
Everything came from
all
the
wood.
Everything came from the rebuilding center. Yeah. And it was most of the wood in the first room was from a balloon framed house. So there are these beautiful, beautiful old boards.
What do you feel now when you just are outside the shop and you know you pretty much almost built it from scratch and there you're standing there and the shop's still around and it's very popular in Portland? It must be a lot of pride there.
I am proud, it's exhausting.
Deservedly so.
Yeah, but thanks. Yeah.
Yeah, I got to give you a quote from Walt Curtis, a very famous Portland poet. He also has a show on cable called Talking Earth. He calls Mother Foucault the literary and intellectual center of Portland, a living room space with a human persona.
Oh, that's so kind. That's so great. Yeah.
How do you achieve something like that? And I wouldn't even know where to begin.
I don't know.
Can you tell us some of the things you did early on to create that space?
I think the really unique thing about the shop is that it's a polyglot shop. So we have books in French, Spanish, German, and English, and Italian, and everything's shelved together on the shelf, and we've always done, especially since we've expanded, doing a lot of readings and music and events, and it's just, you know, the neighborhood and the area and everything and everybody who's involved in it is, you know, it's all kind of come together.
Yeah, we've had cable parties there. And I've attended several readings there.
It's
a great space.
It's nice to be a part of that community.
I looked up an Oregonian article when you first opened in 2011. It described your location as a gritty stretch of Southeast Morrison Street.
I was so offended by that.
It's
come a long way.
Close in Southeast Portland is not so gritty anymore. I know that from our area around KBOO.
Yeah,
we've got one
of
the most expensive restaurants in the city right across the street, Le Pigeon. How has that affected the bookstore? Gone from gritty to maybe a little bit more gentrified?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say because, when we open, it's like the neighborhood's growing, and then I also have, the shop's growing, and it's still, the neighborhood's still pretty real.
Robo Taco's nearby. There's a really good pizza place nearby.
It's a great, my little block is so, it's so great. The barbershop and the Dig a Pony and the skateboard shop, and it's just like it's like a funny little part of town that feels like a real city sometimes.
It seems like that's been kind of a running thread here with all three of the bookstores we've talked about so far. Is you really are a big part of that neighborhood, that community. It's not this when we think of Portland as being gentrified now. It's not this kind of sterile environment. And fortunately, it hasn't become that. I think a big part of that also is your bookstores as kind of a literary center and a social center for that community. Now, last up, and Elise, you and I talked a few weeks ago. It's one of the newest and most unique bookstores in the city, Rose City Book Pub. You opened your doors last November.
Mm-hmm.
And Elise Schumach, I would say your dad is Jim Schumach, who hosted KBOO's Between the Covers programs for many years. And Sally, you said the last time you were in KBOO, Jim interviewed you for Between the Covers.
I was on Jim's show,
So, Elise, you grew up among books and writers.
Yeah.
Can you tell us the washing machine stuff? I love that.
So, at the beginning, my dad did the interviews here at the station, but then he built a little recording studio in the basement. And so all these authors came through the house, and the house is lovely. But then you go down into the basement, you go past the washing machine, and then the studio itself was nice. But there's no way to get around an unfinished basement.
And were there any particular writers that you met at that time? You were very young that stood out.
He did the interviews all the way through when I was in college, I'd say maybe a little longer. So I met Allen Ginsberg on the front porch.
Wow.
I met Oscar Iuelos because I didn't know he was being interviewed, and I came home. I wasn't supposed to.
He was in the middle of an interview, and you just said, "Hey, Oscar, how's it going?"
Or came and made a bunch of noise and added some editing work. And then a lot of times I was supposed to keep myself scarce. I didn't personally get to meet a lot of the people. But there's a guy, Abraham Rodriguez, who...
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think he ever made it big, but he made an impression on me. He was a pretty young man.
What about Ginsberg? Kind of anecdote there? Some poetry?
I just got to shake his hand. But it was, a powerful moment. That's an important person.
Oh, incredible.
Yeah.
And what about the books you were reading at the time? It probably wasn't Howl.
Right. But actually, because all these people were coming through, my dad was always handing me something new that no one else was reading. So I read that guy Rodriguez and Dagoberto Gilb and... Mark Lehner when I was in middle.
Oh, yes. I was a big fan of his. I don't know what happened to him, but he wrote the most unusual funny books. The language was just incredible.
And I think I was in middle school, and it was very strange. It's not very linear, and it's kind of...
No, I think his first novel was My Cousin, My Gastroenterologist.
Yeah.
Which is funny on its own. It doesn't really need to have any pages in the book. You just buy the cover for that.
Yeah, and I don't know which one... this was in, but there's this description of driving through the Midwest, and it was just a paragraph that just repeated corn, 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 stuckies. corn, 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 stuckies.
I wish he published more because, I mean, you don't find writers with that kind of really funny, laugh-out-loud sense of humor in print. I mean, it's pretty rare.
Yeah.
There's humorous, but I heard once that a humorist is a comedian who's not funny. So, but he was very funny. It's a unique bookstore, as I mentioned, in that you don't not only sell books, but you offer food, beer, wine, and cocktails. And I think you're the only bookstore slash bar in the city, and maybe one of the few in the country.
Yeah, although there are two that have opened since I opened, which has been less than a year. I opened in November. After I opened, there's one that's more of a wine bar style that opened up in Oakland on Telegraph Avenue. And then one just opened in the spring outside of Minneapolis.
Oh, okay. So outside of Portland.
But there's a bit of a movement, and there's one that's about to open in New York City. They got their property and their building.
Now, how'd you come up with that idea originally? I mean, in Portland, it seems like a slam dunk to combine two of our
It's actually most favorite things. It's such an obvious slam dunk that my dad at one point said, I wonder if it's illegal. Because why hasn't someone done it already?
You can't drink and read.
And have books at the same time.
It's dangerous.
And, It was actually a friend of mine who ended up working for me for a while, and it was a friend that I met in Los Angeles, and it was his idea, and it was a pipe dream for him. And then I said, I could do that, and I could get back home to Portland if I did that. So I made a three-year plan that at the end of the 2018 school year, I'd come back home.
And you were in Los Angeles, you were a Latin teacher and a tutor.
Yeah, and school counselor
for about 17 years. Was this always in the back of your mind then, opening up a bookstore and moving back to Portland?
Or? No, just for the 3 years after Matan gave me the idea. But coming back home was in my mind from the minute I moved there. Huh. And I spent I was a teacher, so I had school breaks. So I was home a lot for a person who didn't live here.
Now, the next set of questions I have, hopefully kind of a round table here, so feel free to answer. I read a New York Times article that was published about a week ago, and it's on a bookstore called Amazing Books and Records in Pittsburgh. The quote is from the store owner, Eric Ackland, and he says, a bookstore clerk or owner is inevitably something of a therapist. I've worked dozens of retail and restaurant jobs, and this is the one that seems to invite the greatest degree of intimacy, probably because people think that the shop person doesn't have anything to do but read and talk, which I don't know if that's true. But
no.
I don't know if people are really thinking that. I think Eric maybe just made that part up. But can you tell us about one of your intimate moments with a customer where maybe you were something of a therapist?
Well, I had something come up just recently. I mean, I think it's because reading is very personal and very transformative. And so I think it does create a connection between people. So we talk about a lot of personal things, but something happened the other day that hadn't happened before. A customer called me up and set up an appointment because she was dealing with a personal challenge, and she wanted to talk to me about what I knew about resources for it. And it wasn't necessarily about books. It was about resources. And I thought that was pretty cool that she came to a bookstore to talk to me about how I, you know, what advice I might have for her. So that's a pretty cool thing. And the other thing that I think is somewhat intimate, and I think it probably applies more to me and Michael since our stores have been around for a few decades, is I've been to several memorial services for customers
have passed away.
The downside, you know, the good side, like Michael was talking about, is seeing the kids grow up and bringing their own kids in. But, you know, for me, it's a good day when I read The Oregonian on Sunday and don't recognize any names.
I'm getting to that age, too, and I don't even run a bookstore. But any of the others? Maybe a moment? I know customers must come in and ask you for recommendations, and they're probably revealing some, not just personal taste, but a little bit more about their lives that they don't normally reveal to other people.
I'm also a bartender, and that's the other.
Yes.
You're both.
A very intimate
counseling profession. And I have a background in counseling and teaching, and so people just open up to me a lot, and professionally and non-professionally. And then, you know, a little bit of beer gets people talking. So it happens a lot. And then, you know, you build regulars, and that's, you know, you have regulars at a bookstore, but you have daily regulars at a bar. And so then, we in less than a year we've already built sort of community and some really pretty deep connections. I had all in 1 week, I had 3 regulars come to me, and they'd just broken up with very long-term girlfriends.
And they were kind of drowning their sorrows or...
Well, no, but they just, they came and they were like, I thought I'd come here today, just safer in community instead of going home and being sad. Aww. And then one of them, when I said, oh my gosh, you're the third one this week, he said, right, but if it were an earlier era, these would all be divorces. This is, you know, there's a little untangling, and
yes,
a couple of them were living together. Not all of them were, but even so, it's long-term relationship. Anything over a year or so, 20 or 30 years ago, you would have been married by then. And so, yeah, and it was so funny, though, how it was just one after another after another.
Now, Craig, at Mother Foucault's, you're known for the curation of the books. I know everybody I've talked to about the store says, you know, they have a very select group of titles in there. Do you see that reflected in the customers that come in? One of the fields, in fact, is philosophy, which a lot of bookstores don't specialize in.
Yeah, and the post-structuralist French philosophy. And I mean, the books attract the readers, and, you know, it's a thing.
Have there been discussions you've gotten into with some of the people who are seeking philosophy about their life styles
I mean,
and their
philosophy and the literary fiction and translation and the poets, the poetry is interesting too. But
That kind of reminds me of it's kind of the vision I have in my head of what goes on at Shakespeare and Company in Paris.
It's such a sweet place. Yeah.
That's still around, isn't it?
It's still around. Yeah, the shop is not. George Whitman was the previous owner of the shop, and he inherited. It's not the same location as Sylvia Beach's shop, but he kind of inherited the name when Sylvia Beach died, and then His daughter is running it now, and it seems to be thriving.
Now, I think initially when you were talking about your bookstores, we got some idea of what's unique about them. But I wanted to get a little bit more into that. And I know, Michael, I know Annie Bloom's has a store cat.
Yes,
Molly still around, Bloom. Molly Bloom.
Yeah.
Perfect name.
She's about 11 now. We got her when she was 1 from cat adoption team.
Yes, my wife volunteers for Cat Adoption Team.
Oh, really? Wonderful, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great organization.
Our 2 cats at home come from Cat Adoption Team. Mm. Can't say enough good about them. And Molly Bloom is a perfect bookstore cat.
She's the greeter.
Yeah, she's super mellow. She'll let kids come up and pet her, and she's wonderful.
Now, besides Molly, who's a big part of the attraction of Annie Bloom's,
yes,
what would you regard as kind of unique? What sets you apart? I was going to ask a little later about the influence of Amazon, but even more so, we have a very large independent bookstore in town, Powell's. Mm-hmm. So maybe one of the reasons why people would prefer to go to Annie Bloom's rather than Powell's, or if they go to both, why would they would also go to Annie Bloom's?
I think this is true for all of our smaller shops, is that people just want that cozier atmosphere and to feel like they can get to know the staff. And it's just a more intimate space. And speaking of curation, I know we get a lot of that too. People come in and say, oh, you just done such a wonderful job of picking out select titles to have in the store. And
what are some of those? I know I read up on you a bit, and you have probably similar taste to me in terms of the Pynchons, Don DeLillo, Foster Wallace, those kind of big books.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Sometimes they're big books.
And Ulysses.
Yes, and Ulysses. More recently, I guess I've been reading a lot of international authors in translation, and female authors. That's kind of been my kick for the past year or so.
Female American authors? And
No, not necessarily. No, I've like Olga Tokarczuk, who's a Polish author of Flights, most notably the Man Booker International Prize winner from a year or two ago. And she's got a brand new book out. What's the title? Drive Your Plow Over the Bodies of the Dead, I think is the title. And it's really wonderful too. And I went back and read another one of hers that's also in translation, and they're all fantastic.
Can we go around, Sally, Craig, and Elise, and maybe a few book recommendations maybe more of the current ones. I think when we were in before the show, mentioned a book that is coming out this fall, Apple Tree.
It's an anthology from the University of Nebraska Press, which has just come out, and it's different writers writing about finding their parents in themselves, seeing traits of their parents in themselves, and they're all original essays for this book. And there are three Oregon authors represented in it, Kate Carroll DeGutis, Sally Tisdale, and Matt Johnson. And the editor, Lise Funderburg, who lives in Philadelphia, is a Reed College graduate. And all four of them will be at Broadway Books next Wednesday at 7 to read from that book.
Oh, that's great. And maybe some other books that you like or recommend customers
now. I read Nickel Boys this summer.
Colson Whitehead?
It's the new Colson Whitehead novel, and just thought it was a phenomenal book. I'm reading Deep River right now by Carl Marlantis, which is a great book. I read mostly Dead Things, which is a debut novel from Ten House, which I enjoyed a lot.
Who's the author of that?
Her name is Kristen Arnett.
Yeah, we had a show last year where we had independent publishers, including Tin House, Holly MacArthur from there. We're really lucky in this town to have people like you and those publishers.
The
writers.
The literary community in Portland is so ridiculously robust. And, you know, the authors, there's more moving here all the time. Karen Russell recently moved here.
Yes, I interviewed her for Between the Covers a few weeks ago. She's now in her third trimester, so I think she's kind of laying low.
Yeah. and then all the great small presses we have here. I mean, it's just an amazing community for such a relatively small city.
How do you stay in touch with the literary community? You have, I think you have Lydia Yuknovich coming in. She has a book of short stories due early next year.
She has a book of short stories coming from Riverhead in February. It's called Verge, and we're taking pre-orders for signed copies of that book, and I'm sure she will read at the bookstore. We haven't set a date yet, but I'm sure that will happen. You know, we're just kind of in constant contact with the authors. We're emailing them. They come into the store. You know, we're friends with many of them. So it's just kind of an ongoing relationship.
And Craig, do you have any particular books that you would recommend right now? And I know you're very much in touch with the literary community. Charles Selyazicki, of course, Walt Curtis.
And... Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess this year, I really liked Sophia Chalamet of Some Other Winter came out.
She's also local, yep. Isn't she?
Yeah. Yep. The Tavern Books, which is another small local publisher that does mostly poetry and translation and new poetry. They did a really beautiful Yannis Ritsos, the modern Greek poet, this year. And you know, I really like Ed Skoog, who's sitting over there in the corner. He's mm-hmm. he's got a book last year from Copper Canyon. Run the Red Lights.
Is that a book of poetry?
Beautiful book of poetry, yeah.
We have Ed here in the studio, kind of standing guard. In case Walt is at the door there. And you're very much connected to the literary community as well. I've attended readings there.
We do a lot of readings, and we slow down a bit for the summer as well.
Oh, Sally said she takes the summer off now.
I didn't say I take the summer off.
For events.
That would be blissful. We do not hold events at the store in July and August.
So you get to sleep a little earlier or relax a little earlier when you get home.
Yeah, go to bed a little earlier mostly, yeah.
And Elise, some of your recommendations?
Yeah, I thought of three. They're all local. Wendy Gordon wrote Wrong Highway. It's a lot like Revolutionary Road, but it takes place more 70s, 80s.
Wow, and that's Richard Yates wrote Revolutionary Road, and there was a movie.
Yeah, so it's sort of in that style, but a little bit more into the future. And then the Bill Walton Mysteries by James Kirkland, and it's kind of fan fiction, but better, where Bill Walton and Dave Patch solve mysteries.
And Dave Patch is his announcing partner?
Yeah.
Oh, and man, they're like a comedy team. I've seen them on basketball games.
And Jamie makes appropriately frequent reference to the Missoula floods. And anyway, so there's one out, and he's working on the other one, on the second one. He promised at
least four.
What
a great idea.
Yeah, and they're pretty fantastic. And then And then one that I think would be a real favorite for KBOO readers or KBOO listeners is it's called Enemy of the People by Terrence Petty, and he used to be AP bureau chief around here, I think, and it's about the journalists who opposed Hitler in the early years, and spoiler alert, most of them were killed. And it's oddly timely.
But unfortunately, he's been, very timely.
And he's been working on it for 10 years and then came out being relevant.
And that's out now, or that's due in the...
I have some. Yeah.
Okay. Are there any particular titles you're looking... well, you mentioned Lydia's book, Verge, and then the Apple book that are coming out. In publishing in October.
There's another book that's written by a poet named Saeed Jones, and he has a memoir coming out in October called How We Fight for Our Lives that I read an advanced copy of, and it's a beautiful book, and I'm very, very excited about that. There are a ton of books coming out this fall by all the big name authors, Ann Patchett, Alice Hoffman, Margaret Atwood, Bill Bryson, Timothy Egan, that I'm very excited about. But I think this memoir is going to be special. And Brian Doyle has a collection of essays coming in December.
Now, this is one question I have to ask. It's hard to avoid in the age of Amazon. How does a small independent bookstore compete? Amazon seems like it's not just books. They affect almost everybody's business in the retail world.
I think we do that by, again, just being a nice independent business that people in Portland really love to support independent businesses. Every day we have someone come in and say, I chose to come here and buy the book here instead of shopping at Amazon. So it's a very conscious decision on the part of the people who shop at our store to support us. And I think they're totally aware of how the whole thing works. You know, you got to invest in the independent businesses in order to keep them around and keep the Portland the way it is, having these wonderful little neighborhoods that have independent stores in them.
And they can have conversations with the booksellers there and get recommendations rather than kind of the computer-generated recommendations from Amazon.
Right, yeah. Sometimes algorithms are great and, you know, they're really obvious and tell you you've read such and such and now you want to read this.
Yes, if you read this, you'll like this.
But a lot of people have a very eclectic taste and want to be surprised and want to find something that stretches them a little bit, and they can come in and talk to the staff or read our little tags we put on our staff favorites table. Or just get escorted around the store for 20 minutes and have a nice conversation about books.
Anybody else want to weigh in on the Amazon, the monster Amazon?
I sell beer.
Right. That's true. They can't do that.
You know, I just don't really think... I mean, I agree with everything that Michael said, and I wish we did sell beer. But, you know, we're just really not in the same business, just like we're not in the same business as Walmart and Costco, even though they sell heavily discounted books. I mean, it's a very different business. And I think that, as you said, Ken, having that face-to-face interaction is just something special that you don't get, obviously, from an online store. But you also have the freedom and flexibility. Like, for instance, this year we declared it the year of reading James Baldwin, and for the entire year we're selling all of his books 20% off. And we've had fundraisers for the Humane Society and Marriage Equality, and next month we're doing something for Planned Parenthood Advocates of Oregon. Every holiday season we host a book drive for a local school. We donate thousands of dollars in cash and gift certificates and books to local schools and literary organizations. And those are things that, you know, Amazon just doesn't do those things.
No, they
and
don't.
The chain stores don't really do those things. So there's just a lot to be said. And as Michael said, I think people realize if they want their neighborhoods to look like their neighborhoods, they have to support those places.
And not just a bunch of chain stores and big box stores.
Right.
I think the common theme here is community. And we've mentioned how important you guys all, your stores are in your particular communities. And Portland really is, it's one big community, but it's made up of these small sections, kind of almost like a New York. You know, you go a few blocks.
It's very neighborhood-oriented.
Yeah, very neighborhood-oriented. And people, I think, take a lot of pride in your bookshops and shopping there and supporting them. Now, one last question. When I invited you to be on the show, I asked if you might have some other suggestions from other bookstores and bookstore owners. So I wondered if we can go around, some of the people we weren't able to get here in the room, which is only has four mics.
Well, I'll give a shout out to Elisa at another read-through on Mississippi. Mm-hmm. She's really running a great bookstore over there.
Mm-hmm. And Craig, did you have any?
I'm really excited about Joe's shop, Belmont Books, which is mm-hmm. he's just been open a year. He's by the Stumptown on 36th and Belmont, and it's just a really sweet little neighborhood shop, and he's doing a great job.
So, Owen Brook, who's in the studio with us, also mentioned Black Cat Books, Daedalus Books, and Backstory Books.
Those are all great.
It's just incredible. And Elise, you had three I had here that you wrote me.
I think two have already come up, I think. Probably Belmont and Backstory. Crooked House. Rachel, and she's kind of the den mother for the independent booksellers.
Yeah, and there was one more, Windows.
And Windows in St. John's.
And I think we got Michael. I didn't get any from you in email. Do you have any particular ones you like besides Annie Bloom's, of course?
Oh, Sally stole mine for another read through. Yeah, another shop that I love. And
there's also a new shop in St. John's, Two Rivers Books, that Christine has opened in the last year.
This has been a real joy for me as somebody who just loves bookstores, especially your bookstores. So Sally McPherson, Elise Schumach, Craig Florence, and Michael Keefe, thanks so much for joining us in the neighborhood this morning.
Thank you, Ken.
Thanks, Ken. Thanks for having us.
We're very grateful to Sally, Elise, Craig, and Michael for coming into KBOO. Let's take a short break, and when we return, David Koff of Portland's Fake Radio will join us in the studio. We'll be talking about the troupe's upcoming live on-stage radio theater production of The Maltese Falcon. Here's a little something to get you in the mood for noir.
Lux presents Hollywood. The Lux Radio Theater brings you Edward G. Robinson, Gail Patrick, and Laird Cregar in The Maltese Falcon. Ladies and gentlemen, your producer, Mr. Cecil B. DeMille.
Greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. Some people like mystery stories because of the intellectual challenge they present. Personally, I'm seldom able to figure out who done it without skipping to the back of the book. But give me a good detective story, and like presidents, bankers, housewives, and chorus girls the country over, I find that my own troubles fold up their tents like the Arabs and silently steal away. Tonight we point with pride to a triumph of the art, the Dashiell Hammett classic, The Maltese Falcon, brought to us by three of our favorite stars, Edward G. Robinson, Gail Patrick, and Laird Cregar. The Warner Brothers screenplay was masterfully written and directed by John Huston, who comes by his talent naturally because he's Walter Huston's son. For the next hour, we'll follow the eerie trail of this fabulous falcon, which is coveted by many people to their great ill fortune and to the great ill health of a few. I think most of us have a secret desire to be detectives. At least that seems to be very true of this audience, because you've done some good practical detective work by discovering dozens of different ways to use Lux Flakes. And that doesn't make any of us unhappy. Nowadays, many familiar materials are doing a wartime job. Nylon and silk are going into parachutes, cotton, rayon, and wool into uniforms, and many other wartime uses. That means that we on the home front must make the things we have last longer so that our boys on the fighting fronts will have what they need. You're all trying to track down ways and means to make washable fabrics last, and the clue that's giving you domestic detectives the solution is Lux Flakes. But now let's track down the Maltese Falcon, because here's the first act, starring Edward G. Robinson as Sam Spade, Gail Patrick as Bridget, and Laird Cregar as Gutman. At 2 o'clock in the morning, the city of San Francisco lies sleeping under a blanket of fog. Along a lonely street, a man walks slowly, his footsteps ringing hollowly against the wet pavement. He passes a deserted alley and stops. The man turns and peers for a long time into the shadows. Suddenly, one of the shadows moves. The man stumbles backward. His hands reach out to shield his body.
All right, Spade, open up. We know you're in there, Spade. Come on.
Hey, welcome back to Mr. Jones's Neighborhood here on KABU Community Radio, or KABU Neighborhood Radio, as I like to call it. I'm your host, Ken Jones, no relation. We now turn from bookstores to radio theater as we welcome one of our favorite guests, David Koff, Artistic Director of Fake Radio. Fake Radio will be performing a live onstage radio theater production in its entirety, not just the excerpt you just heard, of what many call the greatest noir story of all time, Dashiell Hammett's The Maltese Falcon. There will be two performances, and two performances only, at Portland's Old Church on Saturday, September 14, and at the Vault Theater in Hillsborough on Sunday, the next day, September 15th. David, welcome back to the neighborhood.
It's great to be here. I'm thrilled and honored that I am now one of your favorite guests. My goodness.
Oh, you, from the very beginning.
Oh, please. I'm just a regular Joe who likes radio just like you do.
A regular Joe who's been on about five times. This is your fifth appearance, I think. And oddly enough, you're here to talk about Fake Radio's fifth show in Portland, if my math is correct, since the troupe moved up from Los Angeles. But before we go any farther, can you tell us the current whereabouts of the Black Bird?
I could tell you, Ken, but I've signed a non-disclosure agreement.
Damn it, those NDAs.
Yeah, it's with Deutsche Bank, so unfortunately time I'm unable to reveal any information about its whereabouts or if it even exists, I'm afraid.
Right. Well, petition for that information there. Deutsche Bank, I think, is ready to spill. Now, for listeners who don't know, not that there are any valid excuses for them not knowing, what is Fake Radio?
Well, Fake Radio is a theater troupe that is devoted to two things. Number one, preserving and recreating the golden age of radio live on stage. So audience members can expect to come in and watch a radio show be performed as it was during the 1940s and 1950s. Actors dressed to the nines, script in hand, all the sound and music effects piped in. But we layer on a little bit of improv to the script. So audiences can also expect to have moments of what we would refer to as a loving parody of the show. So,
and they're very funny moments often.
Well, we definitely have been very well reviewed, and I get the honor to work with some of the most insanely
talented cast.
Yeah,
yes.
Actors, stand-up comedians, improvisers, voice actors, and of course these great guest stars that I've gotten the chance to work with.
So tell us who's guest starring in The Maltese Falcon.
So Lynn Marie Stewart is a beloved character actor out of Los Angeles.
Pee-wee's Playhouse?
Yeah, she was on Pee-wee's Playhouse. She then reprised her role in all of the Pee-wee movies and on stage on Broadway when he took the show to Broadway. She's also probably best known as currently playing Andy's mom in It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. So she's got something akin to a 40 or 50 year career playing characters on and off screen in Hollywood. She's also a tremendous voice actor, so she's lent her voice to...
She does animation?
She does, yeah. So she's kind of a triple threat. She's a great actor. She's a tremendous improviser. She's trained out of the Groundlings in Los Angeles and, also does great voice work. So she'll be playing the sort of triple role in The Maltese Falcon, and I won't spoil the story for those who have not heard it or seen it, but...
That's almost unbelievable.
There is a... given how popular the film was. But she'll be taking on the sort of lead character who, let's say, has three different incarnations.
Now, why did you pick The Maltese Falcon? Your previous shows, you started with It's a Wonderful Life. Kevin MacDonald of Kids in the Hall guest starred. War of the Worlds with probably my comedy idol, Phil Proctor
sure.
Of the Firesign Theater. Mindy Sterling, who is in the Austin Powers pictures. Most recently, Dragnet for their 70th anniversary of the radio show with John Pericello of HBO's Barry, Showtime's Twin Peaks. So why The Maltese Falcon? Well, you did Casablanca. Yeah. So this is kind of logical follow-up, I guess.
And honestly, for me, the best way to either introduce these greatest stories from the Golden Age, which is generally considered like 1938 to 1958.
When radio was the primary
when
media
radio was
TV.
The king, yeah. The best way to introduce people who aren't familiar with the art form to a modern audience is to pick titles I think that they will remember. Maybe they haven't seen the movie, but they know enough that the Maltese Falcon is something they heard their parents talking about. Or maybe they saw in black and white on a rerun on Turner Classic Movies. Or the title is popular enough in the public consciousness that there's some identification with it. There are other stories that they may be incredible to see on stage, but aren't as popular with name recognition. So Maltese Falcon won 3 Academy Awards. It cemented Bogart as a bona fide star when the film came out. And, of course, it was written and directed by John Huston, who went on to an illustrious career.
John Huston wrote the film, too?
He wrote the screenplay. He adapted it off of Dashiell Hammett's novel, yeah. And so here is a filmmaker and writer at the height of his, creative career, working with arguably the greatest film actor of that generation, Humphrey Bogart. And the film was, as you mentioned, considered one of the greatest noir stories of all time.
Now, you'll be doing the radio version.
That's right.
So the film version came out in 1941.
That's right. And 2 years later, well, a year and a half. Yeah.
Yeah. Lux Radio Theater did it.
1943.
But Bogart was not Sam Spade in that one.
No. And so, great point. We were just talking about this off the air. So the Lux Radio Theater was this huge juggernaut of a radio show. It had the biggest stars, the biggest budget. And they very frequently got the actors who were in the movie to reprise their roles in the movie, in the radio shows. And for whatever reason, Humphrey Bogart, I guess, wasn't available. So they got Edward G. Robinson, which is a bizarre choice.
Yes, we just heard a little bit about that. And yeah. He just doesn't seem like Sam Spade.
But no, he doesn't. But I think the popularity of the movie and the story was enough to carry it through. And, Edward G. Robinson was still a very popular, well-regarded actor at the time, but I think he was more popular for being a bad guy than he was for
being a detective. But, Sam Spade had a dark side.
He absolutely
he was sleeping
did.
With his partner's wife. And
Yeah. I think it was an interesting choice, and the story carries through. And as you said, the folks at Lux would take a popular movie, and they would turn it into a one-hour radio version. And so that is what people will see when they come to show up. They'll see the original one-hour Lux Radio production, complete with all of the commercial breaks.
It was interesting with Casablanca. We had you on, and again, famous Bogart role.
Oh, yeah.
As Rick, the cafe owner, mm-hmm. In Casablanca. But he didn't play Rick in the radio version. That was Alan Ladd, another famous actor, but not Humphrey Bogart.
Not Humphrey Bogart, I guess.
What's up with Bogart?
I
radio's
guess
not good
was,
enough for him.
I suppose not. Kind of above it all.
Yeah. How'd you get the script for this one, the Maltese Falcon, the Lux Radio Theater version?
So, thankfully, there are... I happen to know one of the gentlemen that does this. He has essentially devoted his life to finding as many old-time radio recordings as he can find, and then transcribing them. So there's like 4 to 10 people who are, I would say, the prime movers and shakers who just do all the transcription. In this case, I gave the recording to a friend of mine, Mark Zorn, in Los Angeles, who had become a real fan of what we do and offered to help. And I said, I can't find a transcription of the Maltese Falcon. Would you be willing to listen to it and transcribe it for us? And he said, I'd be happy to.
What a hero. Boy, thank you.
So thank you, Mark Zorn, if you are listening. Yeah.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, because when we played that excerpt there, it's actually not difficult on the internet to find MP3s.
No, and I
downloadable
absolutely,
ones, too.
Yeah, I
YouTube
recommend.
Has it.
YouTube has it, and you can go to the Internet Archive, which is just archive.org, and they have a whole section devoted to old-time radio shows, and they've got pretty much every Lux Radio Theater show imaginable there.
But of course, it's not the same experience as being there
oh,
and
God,
watching
no.
the fake radio production, because not only are you there live on stage and you're recreating the way radio was done at that time, holding a script and standing in front of a mic before the audience, along with music and special effects, but also the digressions and detours that you take from the script at time.
You know, it's one of those things that just kind of happens organically. It's not like it's ever planned. Someone will maybe botch a pronunciation of a word, or someone says a line in a funny and unexpected way, and the cast just pounces. And it's not like we're improvising, you know, minutes and minutes of script that was never intended. There are these lovely moments or diversions, as you call them, and we just kind of deviate from the script. There's a fun moment between two characters that you would never expect to see in this type of production, and then it goes back to the script again, much to the delight of the audience. And I got to say, the people I get to perform with on stage are so talented to be able to find and create these moments so instantaneously. So my hat's off to my cast that includes...
Oh, I was going to ask that, besides Lynn Stewart. And I know we had him on the show with Phil Proctor when you guys did War of the Worlds. Jonathan Stark will
be in the cast? John Stark and Dave Cox are flying up from Los Angeles. So for my LA cast, they'll be joining the Portland cast, which includes Beau Brousseau, myself, Kiri Leek, Janet Scanlon, Betsy Green, Linda Brown, Eric Niepom, I'm probably forgetting someone, Rita Parrish, and we're waiting, hopefully soon, for Sam Mowry to come join us as well.
Oh, the best voice actor in Portland,
I would
say.
The best voice actor in Portland.
Our local Orson Welles.
I know, and we're waiting for the day that Sam will be able to rejoin us, so hats off to him.
An incredible cast, an incredible show. I think I read that you're planning another production in December. Can you give us a preview, or is that a secret right now?
No, it's
like
not.
The location of
it's
the
not
Maltese
a
Falcon.
Secret. Okay. I can't tell you who the guest star is yet. That is a secret. But we'll be redoing It's a Wonderful Life. We'll be, again, at the Old Church on December the 7th, a Saturday. We'll be back out at the Vault in Hillsborough on December the 8th, a Sunday. And it was our first show when we brought the show to town. It is just one of those things that seems to play really well in December, because everyone knows that story of Jimmy Stewart and Donna Reed and what happens.
Well, David Koff, thanks for joining us in the neighborhood this morning.
A pleasure, as always, Ken. Thank you for having me in.
We look forward to the Maltese Falcon.
Me too.
Well, that's all for this episode of Mr. Jones's Neighborhood here on KABU Community Radio, or KABU Neighborhood Radio, as I like to call it. If you missed any part of the show or would like to hear it all again, if you're that kind of masochist, you can stream this episode and previous episodes online at kboo.fm/program/Mr. Jones's Neighborhood, or just search for it on the KABU website. Well, that's all for this episode. A big neighborhood thank you to Michael Keefe of Annie Bloom's, Sally McPherson of Broadway Books, Craig Florence of Mother Foucault's Bookshop, and Elise Schumach of Rose City Book Pub for joining us live in the KABU studios. Please help support your local indie bookstore and pick up a few of their books for when reading weather returns to Portland in just a few short weeks. And a big thank you to one of our favorite guests, David Koff, Artistic Director of Fake Radio. They'll be performing a live onstage radio theater production of the noir classic The Maltese Falcon at the Old Church in downtown Portland, Saturday, September 14th at 8, and the Vault Theater in Hillsborough on Sunday, September 15th at 7:30. You can find out more on their website, fakeradio.net. Can't leave without giving a big thank you to our engineer in the air room, the inimitable, unparalleled, and extremely literate Sonia Buttrell. And of course, thanks to all of you for listening. I'm your host, Ken Jones, no relation, saying hope it's always a beautiful day in your neighborhood. Let's play this episode out with a song from the Maltese Falcon's point of view.